Impact Leaders, the podcast on leaders focusing on impact investment and performance with purpose, supporting the companies that are solving the world's biggest challenges. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact. And this is your host, JP Dahlman.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Impact Leaders. And today we have Kat Keeley, who is the founder of Beep. We are Beep.com.
Beep. The software is called Beep. We are.
And this is a, we're actually, you know, to be completely honest with our listeners, we are exploring into new kind of ideas and new pastures or new ventures or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And we're trying something completely new, which is talking to somebody that works in a company that is supporting, you know, our impact leaders in the big numbers. So really is, you know, to learn about cats and to learn about Beep, really. So please.
Where do you want me to start?
Tell us about it.
At the very beginning. So to give you a bit of background about where I come from, I started out with my first business, which was trying to figure out how do you get larger companies to be less rubbish. So we could, if this was 2003, they were very kind of fragmented and very top down and very siloed. And I could see that if they didn't get their act together, they were going to die. So my first company was very much about how do we connect big companies with startups. And so we did the first ever open innovation competition back in 2003 for Hewlett-Packard, which was very much about helping the client to understand what their need really was and then asking our ecosystem of startups and creatives and creative technologies to respond to those, but in a very open way. So it was an open gallery where people would post their ideas about what, how they'd answer that challenge. And then the more that they got their followers or their networks to vote for them, the more chance they'd have of getting through the competition.
Also and internal. Then, internal to HP, yeah?
So this was all about Hewlett-Packard asking the startup community to give them ideas about how they could use software.
Perfect.
And in the process, the company finding out more about digital. And they worked very well, apart from what would happen is we'd teach the startups how to pitch. We'd get them in front of the board. The board would get terribly excited because most of the time they had no idea about mobiles or digital. They just had no clue. They'd say, we love that idea. We love that. We'll commission you. We'd bring them into the corporation. 18 months later, they'd get chewed up and spat out by the corporate antibodies, which was neither good for the... It was neither good for the company or for the startup, because by this point, the startups have started investing. They've got new people working for them. They think they've hit the big bucks because they're working with a big organization. And so we started realizing that unless you start on the inside of big companies, it's never going to be possible to innovate. So we started doing multidisciplinary stuff, innovation stuff.
Which is what some people know as a kind of intrapreneurship, right? So within...
Now,
yeah.
And it... And I called entrepreneurs change agents, and every organization's got them, and they're usually squished until they can no longer stand it, and then they leave. That's the usual kind of...
Talked about antibodies. It sounded a bit like virus, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, just you get kicked out because you're not part of the system.
Because you're not different. Because you're different.
Interesting.
And because we're tribal. And again, before I... Yes, if you look at the kind of neuroscience there, human beings have... evolved to be tribal. We're extremely good at keeping collections of people together, but also comes with that we've also evolved to release a chemical which makes us behave defensively, aggressively towards people who look differently or act differently. So we've got all sorts of cognitive biases that stop us kind of changing and accepting different ways of doing things. So we did that for a few years, and I guess we would have been called a digital transformation agency had we had that word to talk about. We didn't know. Nobody quite knew what digital was. And then I got headhunted by the UN. So I went into my particular part of the UN with a completely naive view of what I was going to find. It was
the naive / idealistic.
Maybe. Totally, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and the UN, they're all going to be amazing, and they want to fight the fight for the good fight, and I can help them. And the bit of the UN that I was working for, their mission is to connect the world, which has always been my mission. It's just that how can we connect people using digital so that they can be more than the sum of the parts? Little did I know that the UN is not such a great organization. Have you worked with them?
No, I haven't. I have attended and I have been part of some kind of forums that they have done, but not internally like maybe you did.
So you can imagine. So it's the first time I've worked on the inside of a big organization, because I've always worked from the outside in. And suddenly I'm in probably the most hierarchical, most bureaucratic, most most political, like cutthroat. And it's nobody's fault, actually, because the people who are in, when you actually get to know the people in there, they're beautiful. And they joined because they wanted to make a difference. But the operating model that they're having to struggle with...
It's the rules of engagement of the tribe.
Voila. Yeah. Voila. And so you're not incentivized to try. You're not incentivized to help. You're not incentivized to connect. Anyway, so I was there for a year. We started off, we didn't even have a social media policy. Our social media policy was, our social media policy, Katz, is to tell people not to use it.
Yeah.
I'm like, but your mission is to connect the world. That's insane. Anyway, so we moved from there. A year later, we've brought lots of different technologies in. We're interacting with our stakeholders in a very different way. We end up with this event with 6,500 world leaders connected to 10,000 school kids across the world. And it's amazing
so
what
that
happened.
That was based, by the way,
Geneva.
Geneva.
So it's a big change for them. And I left there with three key takeaways. The first one was, the world is in a terrible state. I had no idea. So at that time, 2010, 2011, we had the Millennium Development Goals. It took me a while to realize that they actually weren't goals at all. They were aspirations and no more. So the world needs fixing across social, environmental, all the things The UN is in no fit state at all to be able to solve any of the above. Neither are they particularly interested, because most of the time they're just trying to keep their head above water, in truth.
Should we expect them to? That's the other question, but yeah, we can talk about that.
Well, my question to you is, what are they there for?
Devil's advocate, right? I think I said to start with, and if we jump to SDGs now, I think just setting some guidance and some just not, just goals, but, definitions and targets and ideas on how people can help and organizations and who can do, et cetera. I think that, just that alone, it's just maybe because of my background, which is about, coming from corporate, from entrepreneurship, that I, hope that individuals have to solve for all of these, organizations, non-governmental or governmental, right?
Yeah.
But that's just my stand, where, I do listen to, or for that matter, taxes, like it's the one thing that came out of, I don't know how many social videos in from Davos a couple of weeks ago, right? Again, for me, so going back to the UN, I think that guidance at least, right? Really good guidance and some kind of, tracking mechanisms, perhaps, that again, nobody seems to be picking up measurement of, actually are we achieving or no, I think if they could do that, I would be very happy, so. Yes.
And I'm not saying for one second that the SDGs are super important. I think at least if we can focus people on something, so I always talk about
North,
North Star is what I call it. But unless you know where you're heading to, then nobody's heading anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So I think the SDGs are very important. But I think people assume that the UN is something that it's not, is the point I'm making. Having worked at the UN, you wouldn't believe how much it opens doors, because it's in some way magical to some people. And it's like, not so much, actually. It's quite broken and it needs fixing. And well, certainly they're not in a position to fix where we are. Yeah. They can set the goal. That's it.
It resonates because it's something that, you know, you would have said then about investment banking, you know, not long ago. So,
yeah,
you know, which everyone idealizes, you know, and thinks, you know, that this is this way, etc. And all of a sudden, bam, it was all broken. And then, okay, yes, we need to sort it out. We do that a lot with a lot of things, right?
It's across everything.
Yeah.
One of the other thing that I took away was the fact that actually any organization can go through change and you can do transformation to any organization, mm-hmm, but not through going in and telling them what to do.
Yeah, I agree, yes.
As soon as you start telling people the answer, this is what you're going to do, command and control, all that kind of nonsense, people go into stasis mode or resistance mode. But if you find the change agents, if you get buy-in from the leadership, if you get them to understand what's in it for them, if you bring them together and actually get them to co-design the way forward, they own it. And then they go back to that bit of the organization and they take that excitement with them. So we did lots of things that they'd never done before, you know, sort of multidisciplinary agile workshops and kind of like online communications and blah, 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 blah. You know, we brought 60, we had a couple of open innovation competitions where we brought 60 social entrepreneurs from all over the world in, and just having their stories and their energy and their possibilities and seeing the speed they could work at, just that in itself really kind of makes people realize that actually the world's a very different place now.
Yeah. And also I think you said that I've done, you know, some of these things as well in corporations, and the one thing I realized is the two things that leaders need to do is actually, you know, walk the talk and actually do it themselves, mm-hmm, not just, you know, kind of this buying just for the sake of buying doesn't work. And then also that kind of the fact that there has to be consequences, yeah, if people actually don't do, you know, what they're supposed to do, what is expected. And the other thing is about the consequences is that, okay, it's fine if people don't want to change, you know, they can actually, you know, move to places where they want to be, you know, which is the other, yes, thing, that is, there's nothing wrong or bad about it.
Oh yeah, and you were saying that there needed to be consequences.
Yeah.
And my, not pushback on that, I agree, but I think the way you get the best from people is not by telling them about the consequences, but by making them accountable, by making them care enough to go, I'm going to do that thing because it's mine.
Yes, ownership, yes.
Ownership. And that's what worked at the UN. And it was incredible to watch people. And bearing in mind, I'll say again, they all join because they care. Or unless they know somebody there. But most of them join because they care. And then you're in an operating model, which means that you're disincentivized from connecting, from doing anything, actually. Because if you do, there's a risk you might leave. So the operating model is very broken.
And as we know, as we know, incentives, just rewards, especially monetary, just don't work or work to a point.
That
don't work for most people in any case. But
so, have you spent any time looking at social physics?
No, social physics.
Really interesting. So, Sandy Pentland in MIT started this new, it's kind of anthropology practice. For the first time ever, we've got affordable data and masses of it. So we can start to look at social behaviors in ways that we've never been able to do before. And so he experiments a lot with changing the incentive and seeing what happens. One of the experiments that he did was for a Swedish electricity company. It was trying to figure out how do we get people to use less electricity, because the government were telling them that they needed to get people to use less electricity because obviously they want to be more sustainable. And so they had two test cases. The first one, they said, if you use X amount of less electricity, we will put X amount of money back in your account. The second one, they said, if you use X amount of less electricity, we will put X amount back into somebody you love's account.
Mm.
So imagine, what do you think would happen in those two cases?
Again, incentives, right? So and change of behavior and retribution or
so the first one where I get the money back,
yeah,
was worked quite well. The one where the money was going back into somebody else's account that they love was 300 times more effective.
Okay.
People have a kind of an inbuilt altruism, and if the money's going to someone else, then they can see that you're doing good, and that in itself is an incentive. So do you know Dan Ariely's work?
Okay, no. Well, we're learning today. Good. good. That's two things now.
So then I so I left the UN and then realized actually what I'd done is impossible. Taking the UN through any kind of change is impossible. So then I started thinking, so what is it about these approaches to change that work when so many don't? So according to the statistics, 80% or near on that of digital transformation projects fail. So in my reckoning, that means that we're wasting about $11 trillion every year on failed transformation. Doesn't surprise anyone, and yet we carry on doing it. So I started thinking, what is it about these approaches that work? And then I thought, if I understand more about how the human brain works, then I can understand why they work and I can make them better. So I started reading Dan Ariely. Now, Dan Ariely's written two books that changed my life. You know, when you read the back of books and they say, this book will change your life, and it never does? These did. The first one's called Predictably Irrational. And the second one is called The Upside of Irrationality. Predictably Irrational is all about, if you understand the way the human brain really works, you realize that all of our systems, our economy, our frameworks, are based around one erroneous assumption, which is that humans make rational decisions. We do not.
No.
We do not. I mean, it's like we're 99% of everything we do is to do with habits.
Emotional bias, habits.
Voila.
Yeah.
Voila. The second one is, but that's good, because once you really understand the way that people make decisions, then you can use all that knowledge to start trying to help create the environments in which people can thrive. So he's a really good friend of mine now. And actually, I was at Burning Man with him. And in fact, it was kind of to do with him why I ended up at Burning Man in the first place. That's a really long rant about how I got to be actually.
And we'll talk about Burning Man maybe at some point. But yeah, because I think you picked up some lessons from that as well, since you mentioned it, right? In terms of community and people doing things. I think I picked it up from one of your articles.
Yeah,
about people preparing all year to do things for others that may not actually have an actual financial outcome, or it was just for the sake of the community and helping each other. And
yeah,
but then again, maybe you can share some of those lessons, because it'd be interesting, you know, like people have perception of things, right? So Burning Man, for those that don't know, I think that most that don't know about it or haven't been in it don't may have a delusional view of what it is, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you...
So Burning Man is an event. I had no idea what to expect. I was invited there by the founders. Dan Ariely said, actually, if you're doing research into how to get the best out of people, go to Burning Man, because that's as good as you're going to get. So it's an event where 70,000 people turn up in the Nevada desert. There's nothing there. You bring everything with you, literally. There's nothing to buy. There's no brands. There's no performance. Everybody brings something with them. And so it's an experience like you've never had in your life, because you're not a consumer. You're a participant. And everyone's a participant, whether you like it or not, because there's nothing else there. You make whatever it is. In a way, it's like a physical manifestation of the internet.
All right.
In some ways.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary, because in that environment, and it's too hot because you're in the desert and it's dry and there's dust storms, and then at night it's freezing cold. It's horrible. But people are just beautiful, like you've never seen. And really creative. So
I was just gonna say, it's like living art. That's what I perceive when I see, you know, whatever it comes out of it, whatever you can see online, etc. Right?
And everything is, and you get a feeling of what humans can be. And it's not perfect. I'm not kind of telling some myth about it. It's not perfect, but it's so much better. And when you're kind of in that environment, and you think about the way that most people are when they're at work, and about the conditions that we set up when we're at work, it makes no sense at all. And, you know, when you see people and they're so engaged and someone has an idea and then suddenly it's happened, you know, people are on and active and aware and engaged, all of those things that we should be and we're not. Here's the stat.
Okay. Yep.
87% of the worldwide workforce is disengaged. Isn't that insane? And what's more insane,
which generates all sorts of byproducts, right? So one is let's call it unhappiness, but health issues, mental health issues,
massive.
I don't know, just waste of lives altogether.
Yeah.
So okay, so all of these, and now.
So while I was at Burning Man,
yeah,
I had this moment of I've spent all of my life trying to figure out how you help large organizations. How to be the best they can be, by which I mean how you can empower people so that they can thrive and therefore so the business can thrive. And I've built lots of bits of tech and I've brought licensed tech into companies and then had to mess around with them to make them work. And I've got to the point where I was like, there's probably nobody else in the world in some ways who knows the pain of change in the way that I do and knows the approaches that work, and especially after the research that I've done around behavioral science, cognitive science, social physics, all of that stuff. I wonder whether I could build a software platform that operationalized all of the experience that I've had over the last 20 years, which was a bit of a nuts thing to think, but that's what we've done.
Yeah, because what does that mean, right?
What does that mean? That means that in every corporation, whether it be governmental, private, whatever, the individuals there do not feel heard. You end up with the board whose job it is to come up with strategies, which are all about the customer, because if you don't have a customer, then you don't have a business. So they're outward facing and they make great strategies and poodle about up there in the Ivy Tower. And then you've got everybody else that's at the bottom of the network who are running around dealing with customers and seeing what's being made, seeing where all the problems are. So they know what's going on. And then there's this thick layer in the middle of kind of soggy, inward-focused middle management. And so it's really frustrating because the people at the bottom who are having to deal with customers and can see where the problems are, they might say to their manager, this isn't working, whether that be an operational thing, a customer-focused thing, an ethical thing, a sustainability thing. Yeah. And their manager might go, oh, just do it.
Yeah, because I was going to say, sometimes depending on the organization, it could be that, only about 10% really face external customers, right? And the rest is just supporting teams, functions,
yes,
etc.
Yeah. Yes. But the closer you are to the grass, to the coal face, the more you know about how the business is really perceived by the outside world and the way it works. So when I did the first Open Innovation competition back in 2003, it was very much about, and I've been using various softwares that do that since, it was very much about the boss comes up with an idea, a problem. You then get your team, your workforce, to tell you as many possible ideas to solve it. The person who's running it, it's their job to get as many ideas as possible because that's how they're incentivized. So I got 340 ideas from across the workforce to solve your problem, boss. And then we're going to use 339 of one of them out of the 340. So all of those people who've done all of that thinking and put all of their energy into trying to figure out a solution are forgotten again. So we've turned it upside down. And what the platform does is reward and recognize people for talking about the things that are getting in the way of them doing their best work. So whether it be a production issue, a manufacturing issue, an operational issue, all of those things that drive you nuts when you're working in an organization, or it be a customer problem, a customer experience thing, or it be, like I say, a sustainability problem, ethical problem. I'm not sure we should be doing this. I'd actually really like the board to know that this is a problem. We've got a problem with our supply chain. At the moment, there's no way of those messages getting back. So the platform rewards and recognizes people for talking about the things that get in the way if they're doing their best work. And if enough people across the organization are talking about similar things, and there's all sorts of clever gamification, behavioral science stuff in there as well, the people who are most engaged with that problem are brought together into design thinking workshops to find solutions. So it's peer moderated, it's decentralized. And it's for the boss to say, do you know what? If you've got a little problem, fix it. I'm giving you permission and I'm going to give you the tools.
Okay. So then the platform basically is the tool and has tools to be kind of self-managed by the enterprise or the company and the people.
So when we first called it Beep, it was the behavioral engagement enterprise platform. Yeah. And I went in to show somebody who works at one of the big sort of mothership groups, and she just said, this is not an engagement platform, this is an empowerment platform.
Yeah.
This is allowing people to take control and become accountable and get excited about it.
Yeah, I may share with you, so something that kind of comes to mind, I know the former enterprise risk manager or head of enterprise risk management at Ferrari, right? And when he tells the story, when he gives his talks, he explains how he improved everything in the company. And it basically sounds like everything you were talking about. So everyone at each level, you know, gets empowered and taught that they had to understand, that they had to flag, that they are a key part of the process, that they had to flag anything that they can find or that they think that is wrong. And that is the way, you know, you kind of efficiently manage the risk in a continuous manner, right? And that's how they, you know, realize something about the tires in advance and this and that. And so that's it. So that's what kind of came to mind. And then some people in the corporate world especially will recognize enterprise risk management. And sometimes you need to, like, make them realize that that's kind of what they can salvage or manage or help with by actually using a platform like this one.
That's exactly right. And actually, and that comes from Toyota. You know how the Toyota way? You know, and that was 1956 when he just said, if you don't tell me how we can make small improvements, we're never going to be as profitable as we need to be or as successful. So your job is not to do. Your job is to constantly think about how we can make things better. So it's not a new thing. I've just digitized it. And the other bit that's wonderfully exciting to me is, and I, again, referring back to Burning Man, being in a good design thinking workshop with a bunch of people that you've never met before and having a clear idea of what problem it is you're trying to solve and understanding that you can be part of finding a solution, it's unbelievably...
empowering.
Yeah. Mm. It makes people wake up. And I think people are not very awake at the moment. So it's a licensed technology, which is about empowering people, getting them to wake up, getting them to actually enjoy where they are. Yeah. Great for the company, because actually, if you're... the interesting statistic... for every senior leader who leaves a company or any highly skilled engineer, to replace them and get them back up to speed takes 213% of their annual salary. So for the kind of companies who aren't looking after their people get miserable, they get unproductive, then they leave. When you start looking at the figures there, I mean, they're wasting a lot of money by making people miserable. Makes no sense.
No.
And so the other thing, going back to the UN piece, is every time we sell a license, we gift a license to a not-for-profit network that's working towards the SDGs. So in that way, it's good for the company again, because it gives them a sense of purpose. And it's obviously good for the not-for-profit, because they have a platform whereby they can start accelerating impact. And it's good for the company as well, because, as you know, the non-financial reporting agenda is getting more and more powerful. And it's very difficult for companies to know how to report against things they've never really had to track before.
Yeah. Okay. So, Kat, you did some work specifically with the number of, you know, a few hundred leaders as well, right? So is that the bulk of the testing and the work that you have done, or this has been done with a lot more companies already? Or?
So the global, the not-for-profit network that we did this test with, which was launched at the UN, it's a group of people called the Global Sustainability Network, which is now 800 world leaders from industry, so CEOs, etc., religion. So it was set up by the Pope originally, amongst others, not-for-profits, researchers, media. And they're a distributed network of very influential individuals who meet four times a year, and they desperately want to figure out how they can get to goal 8.7, which is ending modern-day slavery. But how do you unleash the network effect of a network when people are busy and they're all over the world? Mm-hmm. So actually what was happening before is they just see each other at the meetings, they have conversations, then they go off and come back again nothing's really happened. Yeah. And this is happening across the world, right? And so what we did with them is we crowdsourced the 10 topics that we really needed to talk about when we got to the UN. People had a chance to talk about those topics beforehand, so they were awake already and they had started connecting. They chose which of the workshops they wanted to join. And then at the end of the workshop, we videoed the outcome of the workshop so that the next time we met, we could show the videos and ask the people who'd run the workshop to stand up and say, what's happened since? Have you actually done anything? So it's bringing accountability into
yes.
it. So it's going, okay, let's okay. track where we are.
And then all of these lessons have you applied them to many kind of enterprise clients already, or where are you with Be right now?
We're
early
very
stage?
New, so we're just okay. talking to sort of initial implementation clients.
Okay, fantastic. So on that note, so what? How can people get in touch with you and with Beep to try to see if they can, you know, try it out?
Yeah. So contact us at wearebeep.com. Wearebeep.com, or I'm at Catsy. Or you can email me at cats@keeleyand.co. In fact, it's very difficult to miss Cats Keeley on the interweb. If you want to find me, you'll find me.
and any specific call to action for the listeners? What would you ask them to do?
Yeah, I mean, what we've realized is that there's no point in us talking to any company unless we're talking to them at board level. There are two kinds of CEOs. There are those who are interested in short-term benefits mm-hmm. and those who are genuinely interested in having a legacy and unleashing the potential of their organization long-term. It's the second kind of CEOs we need to be talking to, kind of enlightened, conscious leaders who understand that actually empowered people equals successful company. Common sense isn't mm-hmm. so common.
Perfect. All the first ones that want to convert into the second.
Exactly. But the CEO has to have the right mindset.
Yes, and yes. I agree with you.
He or she needs to understand that we have to have organizations that are constantly learning. And you can only do that if people are allowed to be honest.
Yes. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time
welcome.
And sharing the stories.
That was fun.
So thank you everyone for listening today. This is another episode of Impact Leaders. I hope you enjoyed it and see you next time.
This was Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.